I committed to trace more patterns between the Parshias of the Hanukkah season and the Yontif of Hanukkah. The Parshias of a given season and the Yontif always connect as the Shlah rites, and in this case, the Parshias of Mechiras Yosef and Vayeshev Miketz Vayigash are in particular correlated in early sources. We show them. I'll cite for you one remez, one hint in a very early source. When Yosef and his brothers begin to reconcile, the brothers might not realize it. They don't know who this viceroy Yosef in the sky is. But Yosef is, so to speak, bringing them together, re-cementing the family order. And he has them sit down to a meal in next week's Parsha Parkesh Miketz. Here you have a meal, a social lubricant. And the brothers all seated in age order to re-solidify the family structure over that social lubricant called a meal. A nice family suda. All the energy, all the social and familial energy to bring them together and resolve this epic machlokas and dissension. So the pasuk says in that context, tovoach tevach v'hachin, let's slaughter and prepare. And the final ches in the word tevach, followed by the word v'hachin, vav, hey, chaf, nun, spells out Hanukkah, the shulte giborim. In Shabbos, our Rishon says this, which is more than a cutesy remez. Rather, it is somehow indicating that the great dissension and ultimately its resolution is a Hanukkah story. And actually, this remez is cited as a source to have a family Hanukkah masiba, to have a suit on Hanukkah. Jews have always had family Hanukkah masibas, as though reliving the familial meal. We'll look at it as a Hanukkah masiba, a family Hanukkah party amongst the Shvatim of old. So what this is indicating is, on a deep level, the machlokes between Yosef and his brothers and its resolution is somehow a Hanukkah issue. And as we sit together as families around our Hanukkah masibas, our Hanukkah parties, and we are overcoming differences and so forth, we are somehow resolving those sort of inner dissensions in the Jewish family. How so? Well, let's begin with the fact that when you look at the two sides here, Yosef and his brothers, and perhaps the side of Yosef's brothers, in particular the B'nai Leah, is most championed by Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi with their rash nature, a rashness which they displayed not only against the residents of Shechem, which they killed out, but against Yosef as well, upon whom they conspired. And we explained last week that Shimon and Levi are really the foreshadowers of the Hashmonam, the whole notion of a Jew taking up arms and even displaying violence, but with Sorach Mitzvah, to protect the sacredness of a cause. And in particular, in this case, they are protecting the sacredness of Dina, who was violated, with all the unmistakable, evocative patterns of the Hanukkah story, Tivola Hegman Tchila, the fact that there was a gzeira for young Jewish girls to be violated, particularly a kala to be violated. And just as in the Hanukkah story, the young women were violated by the leader, by the Hegmon, so to hear it was the leader, it was Shechem, who violated Dina. Right, so a violation followed by a great revolt, and we traced many, many other patterns, some obvious from Chazal and some a little covert, between Shimon and Levi taking arms and defeating an entire city in defending this cause, and an unmistakable foreshadow of Rab and Biad Miatim. You could restudy some of those correlations in last week's shiur, but let's firmly square away that dimension of the Hanukkah story. The nace of the Rab Biad Miatim. Well, that fits into what side of the struggle? That is the anti-Yosef side. That is the B'nai Leah side of the struggle. On the other hand, Yosef, who is called by the Navi a Lahava, a flame, we're going to correlate him with the menorah. And this correlation becomes even more compelling when we consider the following pattern. Rashi, in the beginning of this week's parsha, Parshas Vayeshev, B'shem the Medrash, he mentions the following mashal. There was a pechami, there was a blacksmith, who didn't know where to store all of the pishtun, all of the flax, which is fuel for his fire. Until he was told, you know what? One flame from your bellow will consume all of that flax, all of that excess flax you have lying in storage. This mashal of the one spark from his bellow consuming all of that flax, what does that represent? That represents all of the opposition from Esav spelled out in last week's parasha, all of the alufei Esav. Yaakov's wondering, how am I going to deal with them? How am I going to get rid of them? Well, he's told in the beginning of this week's parasha, Ela told us Yaakov Yosef, Yosef, who's like a flame, he is going to get rid of all of the enemies, all of the Esavs. So here we have Yosef, Lahava, Yosef as a flame, specifically correlated to a small flame, a small spark, combusting flax. Why is that significant to a Hanukkah context? Because one of the few Mishnayos in Shas, which specifically mention Hanukkah, is a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, which speaks about a gamelton pishtun, a camel loaded with a lot of flax, which catches onto a ner Hanukkah. The correlation is too snug. Flax correlated by a flame in both respective cases. In one case, it's a ner Hanukkah, in the other case, it's Yosef. We can be firmly confident they are one of the same. So here we have the two famous miracles of Hanukkah. The miracle of the Rambam B'yad Miyatim, the battlefield victory, that is in the Shimon and Levi, that is in the B'nai Leah column. On the other hand, the Ner and the miracle of the menorah and the one flame or Pach Shemen, which is able to take on massive proportions and ignite, that is going to be, so to speak, in the Yosef column. That's a very intriguing way to look at the story. Two miracles of Hanukkah, which correlate and yet have certain contrasts between them. You know, we know that the Al Hanisim, which we recite in the Bracha of Modim and Nodalacha in Shmon Esrei and Benching, mentions the Nase of the battlefield, doesn't mention the Nase of the menorah. On the other hand, the Gemara of Mai Chanukah, the Gemara in Shabbos, the Brisa in Shabbos, when it relates the story of Chanukah, it highlights the menorah, not the battlefield victory. And much ink is spilled upon understanding these two different dimensions, the Ner on one hand, the battlefield victory on the other, which are highlighted in varying contexts. Here we have an exciting prospect emerging that these are actually two very different dimensions of the Hanukkah story and actually two different dimensions of the Jewish family and Knesset Yisrael. And somehow this twosome captures the Yosef versus his brother struggle on a deeper level. And that's what we're going to decipher Be'ezras Hashem today, how these are two different dimensions. But when they come together in the Hanukkah story, the menorah, the Yosef on the one hand, the battlefield victory, the B'nai Leah on the other hand, that somehow represents a resolution of the struggle as was lived in that first Hanukkah Masiba, Tavoach, Tavach, V'Hachein. So, let's develop it as follows. Shimon and Levi's violent resistance, and really what the Hashmonam do too, it's really an attitude of fighting off threats from without, seeing a menacing outside world which is beleaguering the sacredness of the internal Jewish world, our daughters, our values. As we traced last week, HaKazoniyah says, HaChoseinu, you dare not defile our daughters, can be read on one level. You dare not defile our Torah. Torah is called a sister too. Emer l'chachma chosiyat. That's certainly one spirit in Klal Yisrael, one which is very suspect of interaction with the outside world. I'm going to argue, however, on a very general level, Yosef is really a model for interaction with the outside world. He achieves the highest prominence in Mitzrayim, in a foreign culture. And he's beautiful and attractive and attracts even the daughters of Mitzrayim. No Sata Ali Shur, the Pasuk said. Yosef was stared at. And he represents that whole idea of a Kiddush Hashem, of a Jew who is not only successful and moral in public office, but exudes appeal, not the insulation, isolation attitude of the B'nai Leah, but more the representation externally, the exuding vibes of attractiveness, klapei chutz, externally and so on. Two very, very different spirits in Klal Yisrael. And we know that we have different Yidden who have these two different types of tchunas hanashem, nefesh in them. Those who are isolationists and really are shomer al hamishmar, and sure that's none of the cesspool of the outside world can flow internally and be metameos. And at the same time, those who much more have an ability to interact with the outside world. And Klal Yisrael needs both, and we need each of these influences balancing off of each other. Even within an individual, we each have a private side, right? A private side which maintains dignity, kedusha, klapei pnim, internally, and does not open itself up, but we also have a side which presents itself to the outside and exudes some of that positive spiritual energy in a way which can make an impression. This, I'm going to argue, is the Yosef versus his brothers. I'm going to argue here that Yosef and all of Yosef's promise to make a mark on the outside world is specifically what, or precisely what, provokes his brothers. That on one level, they are provoked and they are troubled by this model in Klal Yisrael of beauty klapei chutz, but no sada al yishur. Extending oneself, interacting externally, rather than insulation. And there are a few precious clues which indicate this. For starters, isn't it interesting that Shimon and Levi are attacking both Shechem, who violate Dina, and Yosef? And the Torah puts them side by side. When it says in the Birkas Yaakov, Birtzonom, Harguish and Ikushar, they attack a man, i.e. a city of Men Shechem, and they also uproot an ox Yosef. The two are put side by side. Presumably these are not two distinct targets of Shimon and Levi, but there's some connection between their two attacks upon Shechem on one hand and Yosef on the other. And even more intriguing when we consider that here they are fighting off Shechem and everything which Shechem did to Dina. Well, Yosef marries Asnas, the daughter who was born, we are told by Chazal, from the union between Shechem and Dinah. And more than simply a piece of midrashic trivia, there's a symbolism there. Yosef is embracing the effect of that deed, right? Certainly pure and a total tzaddik from any sort of aveira, but finding a redemptive quality in that unfortunate brush with the outside. He marries the very progeny of that deed which Shimon and Levi fight off. And if that wasn't enough, let's consider more connections between Yosef and Shechem. Yosef receives Shechem as his own city. Yaakov grants Shechem to Yosef, and Yosef is buried in Shechem. It seems as though Yosef is Mekadesh, elevating everything which Shechem is, everything which Shimon and Levi see as threatening, beleaguering Shechem, Yosef's able to embrace. You know why? Because Yosef's model of interaction with the outside, that is a positive tikkun of Ma'ase Shechem. If we could look at it in a creative way, of course it was an aveir, it was horrible, Shechem's violation of Dina and this brush with the outside. But there's a positive tikkun, there's a positive form, and that is Yosef. Shimon and Levi have no tolerance for it, so they attack Yosef just as they attack the people of Shechem. And it's not a coincidence that we see in various midrashim that when Yosef comes and Shimon and Levi spy him with a very jaundiced view, here's the streamer, let's get him. Some Midrashim talk about them seeing Yosef's progeny involved in various averas, such as sights, visions of Ruach HaKodesh. We know his descendant, Yerov ben Avot, is going to erect to a golem, to idolatrous calves, which are going to lead the Jewish people astray. What the Medrash is saying is, from a place of spiritual virtue, beyond simply sibling rivalry in attacking Yosef and jealousy, from a place of virtue, they see Yosef as representing a model of leading the Jewish people astray putting the pieces together, I'm going to suggest that as they see Yosef as a model for interaction with the outside world, as leading the Jewish people astray, rather than maintaining their kedusha v'tahara, their isolation or insulation model. And I'm going to argue that really these two attitudes of insulation versus interaction with the outside can be traced back a generation up. Yosef and his brothers, respectively, well, let's scroll higher to their mothers, Rachel and Leah. Kabbalah teaches us in an off-sided Tikkuni Zohar that Leah's Miyama Deskasya, Leah's from a hidden realm, Rachel Miyama Deskalia, Leah's from a revealed realm. There are many, many dimensions to this Chazal. Rachel is more revealed, Leah is more hidden. Amongst other things, Tikkuni Zohar says this means two models of Hashem's relationship to the Jewish people. Rachel Alma Deskalia, the revealed world, is when Hashem showers us with blessing because we deserve it. There's obvious apparent reason for us to be showered with blessing. Leah Alma Deskasya is that hidden realm where Hashem loves us despite our shortcomings. And we've explained this in the past in terms of Yaakov's love of Rachel based on obvious reasons. Rachel is beautiful versus his ultimate relationship to Leah, which seems to come from nowhere. Despite his initial rejection of her, he learns to love her. That's one dimension of this teaching. But as with every statement of Chazal, it's multi-layered. Rachel is from the revealed realm. She's beautiful, physically, spiritually. All of her virtues send out these sort of vibes. And she is therefore the mother of Yosef, who's beautiful too, who interacts with the outside world. Yosef is Yafas Tor V'Yafas Mara, our Parsha says, just like Rachel was Yafas Tor V'Yafas Mara. And spiritually, Yosef is a tzaddik. Yosef possesses the very title tzaddik. His virtues are obvious. He fights off Eshes Potiphar and the temptation. Not so the B'nai Leah. The B'nai Leah, like their mother Leah, who was less beautiful, in a spiritual sense, their virtue is less revealed. Last week, we traced the many contrasts between Yosef and Yehuda. That when Yehuda faced temptation in our parsha, in terms of Tamar, and a story so carefully staged in so many ways as a contrast with the Yosef story with Eshes Potiphar, Yehuda falls prey. Yehuda's chote, but yet he does tshuva. Right? That's the B'nai Leah model, failing. Virtue is less obvious, but ultimately Hashem takes them back. Yehuda modeling the behavior of his descendant David, who will sin too and be taken back as a Baal Tshuva. It's that model of Leah, Alma Deskasya, the hidden realm that Hashem loves us and takes us back despite our failings. Well, you see how the bigger picture is emerging here, how the revealed realm, that's a realm where the outside, the external world of externality, where spirituality is portrayed even externally, and a world which attracts versus the hidden world in which virtue is hidden. And I'm going to argue from another perspective, from an Alma Deskasya, from a Leia perspective, our virtue is hidden, and therefore our virtue must be carefully guarded. Right? And you could argue in a certain sense, specifically because the B'nai Leah don't have Yosef's Midah of Tzidkus, their virtue is not so overt and apparent. They fail, they fall, as we see in the Yehuda story. That actually makes them more prudent, more careful, more medaktik. The tzaddik, who wins every time, right? He has the luxury, the Yosef has the luxury to exude himself in his virtue, klape chutz. Not so the B'nai Leah. The B'nai Leah know oh so well the dangers of interaction with the outside, and particularly in the arise and the promiscuity area. You see how it comes to a head in the story. It's not a coincidence that it's on the B'nai Leah side, the fighting against the Shechem, and the failings in the same general overall story in the Yehuda side versus the Yosef, who is pure in his own sins and is able to therefore embrace the effect of the Shechem and Dina, right? The progeny thereof, the us. It's not a coincidence. You see the greater picture developing here? And you'll notice how people of great virtue sometimes do not need the same shmira, the same level of safeguard, which most of us need, knowing our failings. In a sense, this will be the Yosef, the tzaddik, as the man who's more comfortable with the outside versus the Bnei Leia, Alma Deskasia, the hidden realm. Virtue is less apparent. They have to be more safeguarded, internally drawn. And in a Hanukkah context, the pieces begin to meld all the more so. Because in many sources, it is indicated that one of the Yavus or one of the most correlate to every Yontif. Avram parallels Pesach, Yitzchak parallels Shavuos, Yaakov parallels Sukkos. And the most parallel the other four Yom Tovim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Chanukah, and Purim. Based on an exhaustive study, I am of the opinion that Sara parallels Rosh Hashanah, Hashem Pakad Asara, Rivka correlates to Yom Kippur. That requires a shir by itself to understand. Leah correlates to Chanukah. Leah is the mother of Hodah, Hapam Odas Hashem. Marissa, she mothered the ability for a Jew to say thank you. Hodah is, of course, the theme of Chanukah, the Jewish Thanksgiving. And Rachel models Purim. Rachel, who is the ancestor of Esther Hamalka and teaches the Midah of Tznius, hiddenness. She, a hiddenness which becomes revealed on Purim, Megillas Esther, Megillah means revealed, revealing that which is hidden, that hidden virtue becomes revealed, which is very much of a Rachel theme, deep, innate, inner virtue, ultimately exudes into Alma Deskalia, into the revealed world. Let's hone in on Leah. Leah Hodah is the theme of Chanukah. Well, Hodah, let's study Hodah. Hodah is from the word confess, admission, submission. When we say thank you, we say it's not me. I need you. Hashem, thank you for what you've given me. I need you. We subordinate ourselves, which is why in Modim we bow in that Brach and Shmon Asrei. And Al Hanisim is in Hodah and Modim, or in Noda Lachan benching. Many Sfarim explain that it is for this reason that the Al Hanisim and Modim focuses specifically on the battlefield victory rather than the Nes, the Pach of the Shemen, right? Giborim b'yam ma'atim, ram b'yam miyatim, giborim b'yam chaloshim, because the battlefield victory is when we might feel smug. We did it. We achieved it. And then we have to say, no, we're Moda Hashem, it's you, it's not us. The Nes, the Pach, Shemen, it's obvious, was Hashem. Right? The point overall is, Leah models this ability for a Jew to subordinate themselves. I'm going to argue that this subordination model has left to do with Alma Deskasi, the hidden world. As in, we are not going to wear and exude our greatness and virtue all over our sleeves. We're moda, we're subordinating ourselves, we're bowing, we're turning inward, we're turning towards the Elokus that's within, towards the Neshama that's within. We are not reveling. We are not reveling in it, in all of the beauty, all of the grandeur, all of the glory. That's Hodah. And that is in Kabbalah, that is the primary midah of Chanukah. Kabbalah highlights Hodah and Chanukah even more than the Hallel of Chanukah. While it's true, it's a yantav of Hallel and Hodah, the Gemara says. It says in the Tikkuni Zohar, the main virtue of Chanukah connected to the Kabbalistic sphere of Hodah is Hodah. It's the yantav of Hodah, right? Which on one level means, unlike the Yavanim, who glorify externality, Yavan is a scent of Yofi, Milash and Yefes, beauty, physical appeal, even Greek logic. It's called Chachma Chitzonis, externality, rationalism as opposed to depth, godliness, and so on. And they have all the hubris and all the arrogance of human achievement, like the Maral says. Who does the model of human submission to that which is transcendent? That's Leah. That's the main theme of Chanukah. But coupled with Hodah, there is something called Hallel. Hallel, I'm going to argue, besides for simply the formal Hallel in the Siddur, Hallel, serenading Hashem rather than thanksgiving, right? It might seem like it's the same thing. Thank you, serenading, but it's not. It's a very different focus. While Hodah is subordination, Hallel, it seems to me, is much more reveling and There's a certain joy in Hallel. Hallel is not becoming small due to our recognition of the divine, but actually being elevated by it, and as I said, reveling in it. Hallel is always connected to Simcha. In fact, the very pasuk cited by the Gemara in Erechin as the source for Hallel, Hashir Yielcham Kelelis Gadash Chag, Rashi Yeshaya says that pasuk Hashir Yielcham, the pasuk of Hallel, can be read as Hasimcha Yielcham. Simcha and Hallel are one. In brackets, I'll note a halachic source. The Ramban explains in the Balamar's opinion, the Balamar who counts Hal as a mitzvah midaraisa on Yontif, that is because Hal is a fulfillment of the simcha of ubiyom simchaschem modechem. Hal is simcha. The way a Jew is happy in a spiritual sense is through Hal. Hal is joy, pride, you know, simcha poritz getter, joy, revelry is not becoming withdrawn, but becoming expressive. That's Hallel versus Hodah, and it's powerful from this perspective to note a pasuk in Iyov, Behilo Nero Ali Roshchem. It uses that term Hallel to describe a ray of light, light from a candle, Behilo Nero. I believe this is the source of the English word a halo, Behilo Nero Ali Roshchem, the same word as Hallel, as Mefarshim note, right? How is connected to light exuding outwardly, which brings all sorts of interesting references in Pesukim into focus. For example, the Pesuk in Hallel itself, when we say, Mimizrach Shem Hashad Mavuo Mahol Shem Hashem. Hashem should be blessed so long as the sun orbits. Mimizrach Shem Hashad Mavuo Mahol Shem Hashem. Well, if Hallel really means halo, really means light, really means a halo, it makes sense that we praise Hashem specifically during the time of R, during the time when the glory and the beauty is apparent. That's Hallel, very different than Hodah. And I am therefore of the belief that the Hallel of Hanukkah actually connects to the Ner Hanukkah itself. The reason why Hallel is one of the focuses of Hanukkah, albeit not as primal as Hodah, but one of the focuses that connects to the Ner, to the candle issue of light, exuding rays, the outside. And where do we place the candle of the menorah? Pesach beisomi b'chutz, we place it outside. As we discussed last week, there are actually two focuses on Hanukkah. There's internality and the bias and the fact that the menorah is only a mitzvah if you have a bias, nerishu beiso, but ultimately the house and the inner identity of a Jew, which is the source of everything, doesn't remain within, but exudes itself outside and creates a positive image of Yiddishkeit and a Lichtigkeit. And on a personal level, this means that we each take our substance, our internal substance of personality, and we make a difference outside, and we exude positivity outside. That's gloriously manifest in the chiv of a bias, the chiv of the inner place, al pesach beisom libachutz, placed in our outside. This is Hallel and Hodah, the beauty of the tusim of Hallel and Hodah. Hodah is inwardness and submitting yourself, the Leah model, and that's primary to Hanukkah, because of course all externality must be tethered to internality. Essentially, we are internal. The place of virtue is internal. It's not in the external realm. It's not in the wheeling and the dealing and all of that stuff. It's in the realm of neshama. It's internal, as the B'nai Le'ah are championing, and even the B'nai Le'ah even have a certain suspicion of the outside world, that this is from their mother's quality. See how the pieces are coming together and cleaving together? That is the virtue of Hodah, of submission, of inwardness, but there is at the same time a virtue of Hallel slash Ner, which we linked, which is the Yosef. Yosef is the candle burning outside. And how powerful that the Hodah, the inwardness with its Leah connection, the Hodah, which is where we say Al-Hanisim, focuses on the battlefield victory, which we already traced, is the contribution of the B'nai Leah. The Chashmonaim were descendants of Levi. They were Kohanim, descendants of Levi, as we touched on last week's year. And the Medrash links the Chashmonaim's behavior back to their ancestor Levi, and that's so manifest in the story when Levi along with Shimon, the story of Shem, when Levi along with Shimon takes up arms, right? That is in Hodah, that is in Al-Hanisim. I'm going to argue on one level that inwardness model of Hodah
is what propels Shimon and Levi to fight the impure interaction with the outside world. It's a sense of virtue is to be found from within, and a certain repulsiveness from the outside, hudah, inwardness fighting off the outside, battlefield victory, the Levi-esque behavior in the hudah of his mother Leah, very, very powerful in the way the coordinates come together, versus the Yosef model, the halal, which complements it, the behilu neir al rosha, in a more halachic shir I gave when we were studying different Rishonim's understanding of Hanukkah and how Rashi and the Mekubalim highlight Hodah as much as Halal, if not even more so than Halal on Hanukkah. And they therefore are go-race, they therefore have the text of the Gemara and Shabbos that Hanukkah is a yantif of Halal and Hodah, along with Halal Hodah. The Rambam, and we trace this extensively in the Halacha Shir, many, many proofs, the Rambam had a different text. He had the text Simcha v'Halal. He actually totally de-emphasizes Hodah. Hodah and Al-Hanisim is not even mentioned in Hilchos Chanukah of the Rambam. It's just mentioned in Hilchos Tefillah as a detail, what we put in Tefillah, but it's not a primary characteristic of Chanukah the way it is in Rashi and the Mekubalim. This was in a recent Halacha Shir I gave here in the Kolon Baltimore. The reason why I'm breaking this up is I mentioned in that context that when you understand the difference between Halal and Hodah, Halal is externality, Hodah is inwardness, you have a new understanding why it's the Mekubalim who are stressing Hodah, and the Rambam, the Beis Medrash, the rationalist, which is stressing Halal from a pneumistic perspective, from an understanding that it's never a coincidence in Torah why different Pratim Midrashas gravitate in different directions in line with each one's Pnimius Neshama. You understand that the world of Kabbalah, the world of Pnimius HaTorah, is gravitating to Hod, which is internality. Mashenkin the Rambam, which is Rambam is our Rebbe in Niglas, the Nigla of Torah, that which we can understand, the rationalism, that is the realm of Halal, that is the realm of exuding beauty externally. There are no coincidences in Torah, including the way or different polymasora lineup. Right, so here we have coming together really an entire picture of two different virtues which have to be melded together both in Hanukkah and the greater Jewish experience. A sense of inwardness, inner identity, pnimius, neshama, which, as I said before, has a lot to do with, on a personal level, on a yachal level, maintaining mindfulness and a sense of purpose and a sense of who I am and not being thrown by crowds and groupthink and so on and not to be mushba, while at the same time an ability to take that pnimius and exude outside, which is what Yosef teaches us, but you can begin to understand why these two different qualities can't be in conflict with each other. And there's suspicion on both sides. There's suspicion between those who are pneumistic and those who fight off the outside world versus those who reach out to the outside world, the Yosefs versus the Bnei Leah. And that's what a lot of this conflict has to do with. And let me trace one more step therein. We mentioned the Medrash that when Yosef in our Parsha kind of steps right into a trap. His father sends him out to see how his brothers are doing, and his brothers are actually conspiring against him. Vayomer Esh Alach, if one man says to his brother, that's Shimon Talevi, according to Chazal, Hinei Balach Halomus HaZal Ba, here's the great dreamer. We said the Medrash says, you know what they're really saying? His descendant, Yerufim, is going to erect calves, Agala. They see, oh boy, in Yosef lies the potential for unwarranted interaction with the outside world, Avodah Zarah, the influence of the Goyim, and so forth. Well, in light of the entire shir that we developed today, you'll begin to trace some very interesting Agala calf connections in what the brothers are singing Yosef and in the Hanukkah story. Because the Egel Hazav, the first golden calf in the Midbar, surfaces conceptually in the culture conf between Klal Yisrael and the Yavanim. Famous Medrash tells us, Yavan is called Choshech, Shech Shichui name Shel Yisrael. You know how they made us dark? They said, Kisvu Lacham al Karen Hashah, right on the horn of an ox, Ein Lacham Chelk Belkei Yisrael. Rashi, in his commentary to the Medrash, says, What does it mean? The Yevanim told the Jewish people, right on the horn of an ox, you give up your portion in relationship to Hashem. Why the horn of an ox? Well, that is a reference to the Egel. The Egel is of the golden calf. The golden calf, which is the son of the ox. They are telling the Jewish people, as the Jewish people carved into the ox horn, we have no portion, Chalila, in Elokei Yisrael. That was really a reference to the Egel and the fact that there could be a severing of relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem. It's through an Egel, right? So all the danger of Yavin is being associated with an Egel. And notice that Shimon and Levi, and in particular Levi, the progenitor of the Hashmonam, is associating Yosef with an Egel, and Yerov ben Avot erecting an Egel. And you're beginning to see that that is not a coincidence. Somehow that Egel represents the outside world, the attractiveness of the outside world, everything they're fighting off in Shechem, which Yosef is less antagonistic to. Certainly he's against Avera, but he sees the potential for the outside world not to be a realm of Avera, but to use it properly. That comes together in the Egel connection, and all the more so when we appreciate that Yosef is himself called an Egel or a Shar. Bechar Shar or Hadarlo, right? Yosef has the midah of whatever an ox or a cow represents. And the Egel, it's not a coincidence that in the abuse of Yosef's characteristics, his descendant Yerov ben Avot has the Jews erect a golem, because the worship of an idol, the Egel is an idol, it's some deep abuse of Yosef's characteristics, as evident by the Medrash, which tells us that when in the Midbar the Jewish people made an Egel, which is again an earlier Egel than the idolatrous calves, which Yerov ben Avot later erects in Jewish history, but conceptually all these idols are connected, right? Well, the Medrash says that in the Midbar, when the Jewish people built the Egel, constructed the Egel, they threw in a piece of clay that said on it, Ali Shur, come up ox, which was a reference to Yosef. We are taught midrashically that years earlier in Mitzray, or back in Mitzray, in relationship to the Egel in the Midbar, it's actually a mere few months earlier. But back in Mitzrayim, when Moshe exhumed Yosef's bones, he wrote, Ali Shur, come up ox, and threw it into a valley where there were many, many coffins, and Yosef's coffins surfaced and ascended. Well, the Jewish people got hold of that text, Ali Shur, come up ox, and they used it not to mean Yosef, but Ali Shur, they threw in that placard, Ali Shur, and the Egel emerged, which more than Midrashic trivia. You understand more than Midrashic. Yosef's called an ox. Ali Shur was thrown in for him to ascend. The Egel is from the ox family. The same placard was used. There's a conceptual meaning here. What the symbolic you're representing is the Egel is some sort of representation of Yosef's great spiritual potential gone astray, right? And hence it's later Yosef's descendant, Yerov ben Avot, who misuses this when he makes an Egel. Now this requires a whole shear by itself, but on a basic level I'm going to suggest an Egel or a Shar, the cow family. The bovines are large animals, large fleshy animals. That represents having a presence in the Olam HaGashmi. Having a presence in the Olam HaGashmi. Not being hodadik, not being leidik, not being withdrawn and inward, but having a presence in the outside, and even a gashmiistic presence, in almost a fleshy gashmiistic way, with all the suspicion of Yetzahara, having a large physical presence, right? I'm being beautiful, klapei chutz, right? That's what the Egel represents. And it's an idolatry of the appeals of the outside world, the fleshy presence of gashmiis, that has much to do with what the Egel is. Again, in a positive sense, it's not being inward, but being expansive and reaching out of oneself to the outside in a big way. The word chesed is in Kabbalah associated with the word gadol. And we also have pesukim which speak about shar gadol, shar being large, like the cows, bovines are large, right? It's for this reason that we find Avram Avinu, the father of chesed, associated with a shar. Rashi tells us in Parashas Naso, when they're makrev ashar in the Chanukah Sanasim, the shar is connected Avram, based on the pasuk V'yala Bokeratz Avram. It's not Avram's chesed, Avram's expansiveness, reaching outside of self rather than being withdrawn. That is very cow-related.
And in a positive sense, that relates to Yosef being beautiful, having a presence, klapei chutz, fleshy, beautiful, everything that connotes, but it could be abused. Oh boy, can it be abused. Falling prey to the outside. And that is what the Shvatim perceived in Yosef. They perceived in Yosef and in Yosef's model, in the sordid model of Yosef. This approach, as I said, in another shiur, Blinatter will talk about more this great ox motif and its positives in the Yosef Avram correlations, its negatives in the Egel and so on. But the notion that these two are correlated is very, very precious. Perhaps we'll re-explore this in the context of the story of Pinchas. Right, we're told that Pinchas was a descendant of a fellow named Putiel. His father, Eliezer, married Mipnos Putiel. The word Putiel has two different meanings in Chazal, two different meanings which obviously complement each other. We're told it means Yosef Shepipe B'Yisro. His mother was a descendant of Yosef, who ruled over his Yetzirah when it came to promiscuity and arise. But we're also told he's a descendant of Yisro Shepitem, Agolim Lavodazar, fattened up calves. It's not a coincidence that the term Putiel is being read both in terms of fattening cows to idolatry on one hand, and is also being read in terms of Yosef ruling over his Yetzirah, because Yosef has the ability to take all the sordid potential, the fattening of cows to idolatry, everything that conveys the lard, fattening, the presence, klapei chutz, externality, guf, fleshiness. Yosef is able to be mekadesh. Yosef, who is himself the ox, he rules over his Yetzirah, he rules over pitem, b'yitzir means he rules over it, means he's able to marshal it the right way. Right? He doesn't get rid of it. He rules over it. He's able to marshal it the right way. Yosef, who knows to deal with the outside world, that's for a different shear. Right? But we begin to understand many, many places to go with this. I don't want to get too far off field in our placing of different coordinates into our greater constellation here, where the cow fits into the picture, where the candle and hollow pieces and the Yosef pieces fit into the picture, the Hodah pieces fit into the picture, the Leah connection, which he bequeathed to Shimon and Levi and so forth, and to Yehuda, and to Yehuda Maccabee, who's on that side, from the word Hodah, Yehudas also, right? And those who, Yehuda Maccabee and Yehudas, are all on the side of fighting off Yevonim. Right, that's all the Leah fighting off the outside, suspicion of the outside model, versus the expression klapei chutz externally of Yosef. All of this needs to come together on Hanukkah. It's the Yontif of Hudah, when we regain our sense of inwardness, our sense of pnimius. But ultimately, we have such a healthy sense of inwardness that we are able to exude a klapei chutz and make a difference in the world. And that's why the mitzvah of menorah is a mitzvah of the bias, the inward realm, but it's placed externally. Al pesach beisam li b'chutz. Well, for that to happen, we're going to need these different spirits in the Jewish community brought together. The Yosef along with the Bnei Leah. And that's why the reference to that first Hanukkah masiba, Tavach Tavach V'Hachin, is when Yosef and his brothers are able to break bread, when these two influences in the Jewish people and these two personality types are able to come together, then we can have a Hanukkah meal. And we each need to resolve within ourselves the Yosef versus the Bnei Leah, the Hallel with the Hodah, the nace of the menorah along with the nace of the battlefield, our fighting off of the outside world and outside influences in our quest for internality and pnimius, along with our ability to affect the outside world. And on a very personal level, I'm just going to reiterate. We need to be substantive people, have a sense of inner sense of self. I'm substantive. I'm not an empty, superficial person. I have self-awareness, sense of self. I'm a growing person. But at the same time, exude some of those vibes of the me, of the heilika, the holy ani, me, outside, and be mekadosh the world and elevate the world. That is really the bias which is exuding itself
externally. That is the ner, which is on Pesach basically b'chutz, and that is all coming together in this quest for shalom between Yosef and his brothers. May we all have the ability to be inward people, to be people of substance, along with appeal, and the ability to exude those vibes, klapei chutz. It's the story of personal success, the story of national success for the Jewish people, the story of these parshiyos, the greater resolution of struggle in the Jewish people, and the story of Hanukkah. Thank you very much.